turn your Bibles to Revelation, the 12th chapter. In just a moment, we'll be looking there. Revelation, the 12th chapter. While you're turning there, I'll take a moment to express my gratitude to you for over the last several weeks, between health issues I've had and then travel plans that Robin and I had. I've been out of the pulpit and out of the classroom for some time, and others have filled in for me, and I appreciate that very much. Appreciate the congregation here making it possible for me to take trips and visit with family and do things of that sort. Well, you know, when you read through the book of Acts, I think it becomes pretty apparent that the church, as it was established in the second chapter and following onward through about the first eight chapters, just experienced phenomenal growth, just over and over again. I think chapter 4, chapter 6, chapter 8, there are statements made in those chapters about how much the number of the disciples who began to follow Jesus began to increase. And that stirs in the minds of the disciples of the Lord from any age the question about, well, how did they do that? How did they go about doing that? You know, there are a lot of people that are just plain experts at increasing the number of people who are present at some particular event. It might be religious event, but it might be completely secular events. But they're experts that can draw crowds. And a lot of people like to be parts of big crowds. Here just yesterday, all across this country, at numerous locations, there were tens of thousands of people who were gathered together in order to watch football games. And then you can just add to that the number of people who were anxious to attend baseball games or various other kinds of sporting activities. There are a lot of different ways that you can go about gathering large crowds of people. And that attention gets focused upon religious concerns as well. And the week just doesn't go by that don't get some here at the building, we don't get some kind of piece of mail that is intended to, or at least it promises to increase the size of your church crowds. And they have all kinds of ways, all kinds of methods to go about getting people to come and to attend. And so, like I said, the question, it's almost inevitable when one looks at the large numbers of people who were attracted by the gospel message. It's, well, how did they go about doing that? Well, I want to talk to you for just a few moments this morning about one passage of Scripture that I believe speaks to how those early Christians attracted the attention and even gained the participation in the Lord's cause of numerous other people. Revelation, the 12th chapter, in the latter part of that first century, when the church was still a few decades old by this time, when you get to the book of Romans. But in the 12th chapter of Romans, there is this statement made in verses 10 and 11, where John says that I heard a loud voice in heaven say, now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and of the authority of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren has been thrown down, who accuses them before our God day and night. Now, he is describing here, of course, the great contest, the great confrontation between God and God's purposes, and Satan, the great accuser of the Lord's people. And he describes the utter defeat of God's enemies here in verse 10. But I want us to focus our attention on verse 11, where he says, "And they overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb and because of the word of their testimony, and they did not love their life even to death." And I want to suggest to you that there are two, three things in this verse that I believe give answer to that question of how did those early Christians gain such an attention from their fellow citizens? How did they convince so many of them to become Christians themselves? And so if you'd look with me at this verse, I want to point out to you a couple of things from it. And the first is that what these folks did was they brought their own lives into line with the teachings of Christ. Notice in that text, as we read in verse 11, he says they overcame because of the blood of the Lamb and because of the word of their testimony. There was something to do with their participation, their involvement in trying to promote and to extend the truth of Christ. As I mentioned, the book of Acts, when you get to the 8th chapter of the book of Acts, and there's a great persecution of the Lord's church in Jerusalem, and they're scattered all over, the opening verses of Acts chapter 8 says that those Christians that were scattered all over, they went everywhere preaching the word. There was a testimony associated with their beliefs. There was a message. And one of the things that they did was that they brought their lives into conformity with the message that they were preaching. Now, let me point this out to you, and I know you're going to be amazed by the insight of this. And I didn't even have to read it from any of those sources of mail and information about increasing audience. You'll have a hard time promoting your message if your life doesn't conform with your message. If you're telling people to do something, that they ought to do something, but you're not willing to do it yourself, you're going to have a hard time convincing them that they ought to do it. Now, what these folks did regarding the testimony of their word, as John describes it in Revelation, was they brought their lives into conformity with the testimony of the word. We would have a real technical way of explaining this. We would call it they practiced what they preached. And isn't this exactly what Jesus was teaching his disciples in Matthew, the 5th chapter, in the Sermon on the Mount? You recall how he talks about going out and letting your light shine before men that they may see your good works and that they might glorify your Father who is in heaven. The whole thing that Jesus describes there is based on this idea of bringing into line our conduct with our teaching. And so people seeing in our behavior an example of what we're trying to teach them. There's an old story about a preacher. A lady told him one time, said, Oh, brother, you must be able to preach so much truth in your sermon. You're so good. You must live such a good life. You're such a good preacher. And his response was, "Well, sister, I can preach more truth in my sermon than I can live in my life." Well, the point of all of this is that ought not to be the case. They ought to be in agreement. And so if you want to be someone who can produce like those early Christians did in the book of Acts, then what we need to be able to do then is to conform our lives to what it is we're teaching. And then, of course, another element of this has to do with exactly what they were teaching. Exactly what was it that they were talking about? Now, some of the church growth experts will tell you, if you really want your church to increase, you really want your church to grow, then what you need to do is you need to start talking about these political subjects, or you need to start talking about these social topics, or you need to bring your group to the forefront of discussions about these community issues. And there are all sorts of topics that church growth experts will tell churches that they ought to become involved in. When you look at what these folks in the first century did, even under the most difficult of circumstances when they were persecuted, they went everywhere, chapter 8 of Acts says, they went everywhere preaching the word. They had a message. And they stayed on message, as we might say. They brought their lives into conformity with their message, but they also persisted in the proclaiming of that message. And they didn't lose sight of what was important. Isn't that what the Apostle Paul was declaring when he said, I'm not ashamed of the gospel, because it's the power of God to salvation, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. To everybody and to anybody, it's the message that saves. And so Paul says, I'm not ashamed of it. I'm not ashamed to talk about it. I'm not ashamed to share it with others. And so when we look at the first thing that this verse in Revelation 12 tells us, in verse 11, it tells us about the word of the testimony that these people proclaim. And it was a message that they stuck to, and it was a message that they lived out, and that we're going to have to do exactly the same thing as well. But you notice that he also speaks about in that 11th verse, in addition to the word of their testimony, he talks about they did not love their life even to death. Now here is a real challenge to us if we're going to be able to embrace this same kind of commitment, the same kind of devotion, and have the same kinds of production. It is, we're going to have this kind of commitment to the Lord, even to the point of being willing to give our lives. That's what these folks were willing to do. They were willing to give their very lives. And you read Revelation 2 and verse 10. It's another passage from John's revelation that demonstrates this when he talks to them there about being a people who would be willing to sacrifice their lives, to love their lives, he says, verse 10, to not fear what you're about to suffer. The devil is about to cast some of you into prison that you may be tested, and you will have tribulations 10 days. Be faithful until death, and I will give you the crown of life. Be faithful to the point of being willing to die. Many in the New Testament did just exactly that. They died. You read about Stephen dying for his Lord. You read about James dying for his Lord. You read about the many who were nameless Christians in the 9th chapter of Acts, in the first couple of verses. There again, those who fell under the weight of persecution led by that man that we know as Saul of Tarsus, and how they were carried off into prison, and many were put to death. And so it just becomes a matter of really, how devoted are we? What's the level of commitment? You've heard the story about the chicken and the rooster that were walking along down the road together, and they came across a sign about feeding the homeless. And I said the chicken and the rooster is not, it's a chicken and a pig walking down. And the chicken says, "Let's feed the homeless." He said, "I'll provide the eggs." Well, the pig thought about it a minute, and he said, "Well, for you, it requires a contribution. For me, it requires full commitment." And that's really the question, isn't it? That the scriptures raise to us of what is the level of our commitment. Isn't this what Jesus was talking about when he talked about those who were willing to die that they might live? Isn't it what Jesus was discussing when he said to people that you must love me more than you love father and mother and brother and sister? Isn't it what was demonstrated in example after example of men and women who were willing to go off and to offer up their very own lives, like those folks in Acts the 9th chapter? Yes, it is true. We need to be people who have a testimony of our word. We need to have a message that we're devoted to proclaiming. But we need to be willing to live by that message. But it's a message that's going to require our fullest commitment. And if we're like the chicken in that example, and we're willing to make a little contribution here every once in a while, but the full measure of devotion is out of the question. If that's beyond us, if that's too high a price, then we're certainly not going to have the same kind of results that we see these folks in the New Testament having. So there are two things. There is the word of our testimony. There is the devotion, the level of devotion that we have to the Lord. Not loving our lives even to the death. And then there's the third thing that he speaks of. This final aspect. He said it was because of the blood of the Lamb. Here we step outside ourselves when we consider these matters. Here's something, not a testimony that we are proclaiming. Here's something that is not a devotion that we are giving ourselves to. Here is something in addition to, something outside, something other than ourselves. It is the blood, as John speaks of here in this text. It is the blood of the Lamb. If you look over in 1 Peter, the first chapter, we find where the Apostle Peter speaks of this, puts it into perhaps even a more complete description. In chapter 1 of 1 Peter, when he says in verse 18, "Knowing that you were not redeemed with perishable things like silver or gold from your futile way of life inherited from your fathers." Now listen to him. "But with precious blood as of a lamb, unblemished and spotless, the blood of Christ." Here was that third critical element that John describes in Revelation 12. It is the blood of the Lamb. It is, as Peter describes it, the spotless, the pure blood. What are we talking about when we talk about blood? The blood of the Lamb. There's so much emphasis throughout the New Testament about the blood of Jesus. Peter identifies it clearly here. It is the blood of Christ. What are we talking about in that? It is, I think, appropriate to call it metaphorical in this sense. Not that the blood that Jesus shed wasn't literally shed. Not that it wasn't literal blood. It was. But it's metaphorical in this sense. Whenever you read this in the New Testament, here's what you ought to be here's what you ought to read. Here's what you ought to think. When you read about blood and blood of Christ, you ought to think about death. That's what it is. That's what blood, the shedding of blood, is representative of. It is the giving of one's life. And so when we think about, okay, what can those who are at Tustin do in order to appeal to people and convince people like the Christians in the first century did to become Christians and to follow the Lord? What can we do? We can have a testimony of our own word with lives that conform to it. We can be a people then who, looking back in that 11th verse, be a people who do not love our lives to the death. That is, be people who have given commitment of ourselves fully and completely. And then we can be a people whose message, whose very existence is wrapped around this singular event in history, the death of Jesus. You want to know what we ought to have as our message to people? It's the death of Jesus. You want to know why you ought to be willing to conform your life to the message of the gospel? Well, that's not the most convenient thing to do. Why should you be willing to undergo the difficulties and the challenges? It's because of the death of Jesus. You want to know why your message to other people ought to be a message about the death of someone? A lot of people don't want to hear about that. But you want to know why that ought to be your message and my message, and we're unwilling to waver from it, we are determined to stay on message? It's because of the death of Jesus. That's what it all comes down to. And that's why the Apostle Peter would say that you are redeemed, not by perishable things, not by silver and gold, not by money, not by any kind of material possessions, but you're redeemed by the death of Jesus. So, is that a message that you find worthwhile? Then share it. If it's worthwhile, share it. If it's not worthwhile, then ignore it. Just kind of push it off to the side somewhere. Do you find that to be a message that is worthwhile for you to change your life about? Do you find it to be a message that makes it worthwhile to bring your life into conformity with what Jesus, who died for you, teaches? Again, it won't always be convenient. But the question is it worthwhile? If it is, then today, why don't you conform with it? Why don't you bring your life into line with the life of Jesus? Give your obedience to Him. He told men and women that if they would believe that He is the Son of God, if they would turn away from their sins and confess their faith in Him, they'd be baptized, washing the guilt of their sins away. They'd be forgiven of all their wrongs. They would have been brought into conformity with his gospel and could go forward from that point on, bringing their lives into conformity with his teaching. Seems to me like that's probably a pretty good plan to follow if we want to try and convince people today, like they did in the New Testament day, that they need to become Christians. Are you subject to the invitation of Jesus today? Won't you come to him, obey him today, while we stand and sing?